the threat of it that's that in my mind is so damning.
Michael Hastings, I want to thank you for being with us, contributing editor at Rolling Stone. His new book is called The Operators, The Wild and Terrifying Inside Story of America's War in Afghanistan. We have two job openings. Democracy Now! Has one for a full-time systems administrator. Check our website at democracynow.org, the other for a Rails developer. I'm Amy Goodman with Naomi Shane.
University of Toronto's new fundraising campaign describes a university of boundless possibilities and potential. But education workers here live a different story. We know a UofT of boundless financial uncertainty, boundless discrimination, and boundless tutorial and lab sizes. QP 3902 is fighting to protect graduate student funding and improve the quality of education for all students. But we can't do it alone. Visit boundlessutoronto.ca to learn how you can help.
A message from QP Local 3902, UofT's education workers.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations.
Que voy a hacer, je ne sais pas. Que voy a hacer, je ne sais plus. Que voy a hacer, je suis perdu.
Today on your show, a special treat, award-winning advertising and marketing expert Terry O'Reilly. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Award-winning advertising and marketing expert Terry O'Reilly is author of The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture, and host of Under the Influence on national CBC Radio. He joins me for a feature conversation. Terry O'Reilly co-founded Pirate Radio and Television in 1990, a creative audio production company. Pirate has two offices in Toronto and New York City. Terry's won a few hundred national and international awards for writing and directing. He hosts sold-out creative radio seminars, was named Canadian Judge for the inaugural year of radio at the Cannes Advertising Festival in France. Stay tuned for an exciting hour of radio. Terry and I are going to cover three topics. The first 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk about Terry's own career as a social anthropologist, as he calls it, and we'll look at a few key turning points when everything changed in his career. Second, for another 10 minutes or so, we're going to talk about what you can do to better communicate your own story and harness the power of storytelling, and how, as Terry says, to zig when everyone else is zagging. And then the third part, for about a half an hour, Terry and I are going to walk into a more substantial interview about a fascinating conversation, what the career field itself can do to shape up its image and market itself better, how to embrace the obstacle of misperception, and how to change the perception in the public's mind about career management. Stay tuned to the end when Terry shares what he's learned about making good career and life choices, including the importance of simply asking for the opportunity.
Terry O'Reilly, welcome to Career Buzz.
Well, it's great to be here, Mark.
Thanks so much for doing the interview with us today.
My pleasure.
Can I start off a bit by asking you about your own career? What do you like about your career these days?
You know what, I've always said about my career that the thing I love most about it is that it's different every day.
So lots of variety.
There's a lot of variety in my business because every day I've got a different campaign to direct, or I've got a different campaign to write. I love the puzzle of marketing. That's one of the things that I think attracted me 30 years ago to this business, was it truly is a puzzle. It's got questions, it's got riddles, it's got seemingly insurmountable obstacles sometimes, but I've always believed, and it's been proven to me over and over again in my career, that there's always a solution. So I love the thinking and the strategy and the puzzle that is marketing.
Now, you're doing a lot of things. You have a radio show that many listeners might be familiar with. Here we are at your studio, inside your own company. What are all the things that make up your career these days?
Well, first and foremost, I am a working ad man. And I say that because many times when I'm introduced at speeches that I give, they only introduce me as a CBC host. And really, my radio show is the smallest part of my life. I create my radio show and write and produce it in stolen moments. So my day-to-day career, which has been for the last 30 years, is I'm a functioning ad man, and in particular, I'm a director. So I direct radio commercials, and I direct the sound and music and voiceover and sound effects for television commercials. So my company, Pirate, is a post-audio production company, and our biggest clients are advertising agencies. So when they have written a radio script or they have gone out and shot a television spot or campaign, they bring it to us. We're the last stop before broadcast. So we add all the sound, all the music, direct the voiceover actors, do the final mix, and off it goes to air.
Right on. Now, we've had a lot of guests on the show who do all kinds of different things in the world of work, and it's so important to think about the strengths that we bring to our job, right? Having a job where you get to use your strengths daily is a recipe for career happiness. What are the key strengths that you draw on to be successful in your career?
It's always so hard to analyze oneself. I will say this, because I'm primarily a writer, a copywriter, I think one of the strengths most writers share is the ability to observe a situation while you're inside it. In other words, hover above any situation and look at what the dynamics are between people and situations, etc., so that you can write with insight. So a sense of observation is something that I definitely have. I think I'm observant to a fault, as my wife will tell you. I'm also intensely curious. That has been a characteristic of mine since I was a kid, I think. I'm intensely curious about just about everything. If I met you at a party, I would probably pepper you with 50 questions about your life out of genuine interest to know about it, because I love people. I love to know about what makes them tick. My radio show really is social anthropology. It's how human nature runs and how it works. It's really, really not so much about advertising as it is about human nature. So I am intensely curious.
And if you could take us on one journey into your own career, maybe one key turning point, where, you know, so many stories are filled with surprises and things that people didn't actually expect. What's a turning point in your own career that brought you here that you can share with listeners?
I'd have to say one of the clearest epiphany moments for me in my career was many, many years ago. I probably had maybe 5 years under my belt. I was still considered green, still kind of in the junior to middle range of this business. And I always found myself constantly in meetings with a lot of senior people where the direction for a campaign or a strategy or whatever would be decided. And I would feel the opposite way. So the whole room would decide to go one way, and in my heart I wanted to go the opposite way. But I would always write that off to being green and being young and maybe not fully understanding it the way the senior people did. But I felt that almost every time, or a big percentage of the time. And then one day, I put my hand up in a meeting as the green kid in the room and said, actually, I feel differently, and let me take you through my thinking. And I did. And the creative director, I remember him very distinctly looking at me and saying, I agree. We're going to go that way. Okay, and the whole room switched around to my point of view. And in that moment, my career changed. I was given incredible opportunities by that creative director, which led to me doing a lot of award-winning work, which led to a lot of clients and advertisers wanting to work with me, etc. And what I'm really saying there is it was the first time I had the courage to listen to my inner voice, to my instinct. I had heard it, but I didn't trust it. And in that moment, I just, for whatever reason, I stuck my hand up and spoke my piece. It was the first time I really said it out loud. And in that moment, the trajectory of my career changed.
Thanks for sharing that story. I think a lot of listeners might resonate with a moment in their own career, maybe a missed opportunity or a taken opportunity along the lines of what you just said. Can you remember what it was? You mentioned the word courage, and I think that's an apt word to describe the experience that you had. But if a listener is thinking about their own career and their own life story and thinking, gee, you know, how do you muster the courage? Do you remember what it took? Do you remember the story that you were telling yourself of, do I put my hand up and speak up? Do I not? What was it that gave you the courage and helped you overcome that kind of natural tendency to just shut up and sit there?
I don't know if I don't know what it was that day, that particular day. I think I just saw other decisions that were made over my head or without counting my vote go forward and really produce lackluster or mediocre results. And I really would sit back and think, you know, if it had gone the way I truly believed it should have gone, I think the results would have been better. And just enough of that built up, not a toxic level, but enough of it built up inside me that I just, it kind of burst out of me that, and I was very, I mean, I was very calm about it, but I said, I have a different point of view. Let me lay it out for you. It was even, I think, the way I said it, which made the room open to it, rather than just saying, I think you're wrong, and being confrontational about it. But I really, it was a buildup of anxiety that I wanted to get it out, because I truly, truly believed that I had a different point of view that was worth listening to.
Great. I think that that's really insightful. There's a buildup, yet you spoke up before it became toxic, because certainly lots of people are walking around saying, it's toxic, everybody's making these decisions and I have no voice. Common experience that people have. So there's a little zone in there where you have enough confidence, but before it gets really out of hand.
And you know, you have to be in the right environment too. I mean, that a lot has to be said. That creative director who turned out to be a mentor, a whole other thing in a career, by the way, if you're lucky to even find a mentor in your life, he became my mentor. What was brilliant about him was he created an environment that made it okay to take a calculated risk, to take a risk. And I think you have to feel the courage to do that in a great company. If you run on fear, if fear's the fuel, you'll never stick your neck out. But if you're working for a boss or a group, or in my case, a creative director who encouraged you to think in a way that was coloring outside the lines, if you feel it's supported, you'll bring those ideas forward, and that's when your career is going to move. So it's trying to find also, it's not just you, you have to be in the right environment too.
Yes. My guest today on Career Buzz is Terry O'Reilly, award-winning advertising and marketing expert here on Career Buzz 89.5 FM, and I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Terry, I'd like to move the conversation into a couple of directions now and get some insights and ideas both for individuals trying to manage their own career and present themselves to prospective employers, and then a larger conversation about the whole career industry itself and talk a little bit about what we can learn from advertising about getting the word out. So first, for the ordinary person, everybody who's listening, everybody has their own career and they're trying in many cases to present the right face to a prospective employer. And we're stuck with these old tools and old ideas. We have these kind of boring resumes and we have this whole boring approach to job search. So what can we learn from advertising about presenting a more creative front, presenting something that's going to be a little bit more attention-grabbing to prospective employers so that we can tell our story in better ways?
No smart advertiser would ever create a campaign that looked like a competitor. So if you extrapolate from that personally, your approach to a company should never be the usual way things are always done. And I don't care who tells you there is a way to do it. I really think the key is to zig when everybody's zagging. That is the golden mantra of marketing. So that means you first have to analyze what is the market, what does everybody do, what's the standard way of doing things, and put that up on a piece of paper and stick it up on the wall in front of you and say, okay, if I can't do any of that, what am I going to do? And I think that forces you into some creative thinking. So that being said, I think you want to, you know, I think a resume, while that's a necessary part, it can have some creativity. I don't think it should be crazy, but I think it could be fresh looking and it could be laid out in a different way. I think how you approach a prospective employer could be unusual. I think you should do your homework. I mean, when I first started out looking for a job as a copywriter, I knew it was incredibly competitive as a field for young green copywriters, that there would be 50 of me knocking on the door. So what I did, and I've taken it to heart ever since, I made a list of the agencies I wanted to work for, and then I went to the library and researched them. And I made extensive notes on the agency and the creative director's career, because I knew if I was sitting in a room across from a creative director and I was up for a job against another copywriter of equal talent, if I knew everything about that creative director and that agency, that I would get the job. And I did. Even now when I interview people and they come in and we're having a nice conversation, and if I say to them, what's the favorite work that my company has done? What pieces do you love the best that my company has done? And if I even detect a pause, the interview's over, because they didn't do their homework. I'm just P, alphabetically on their list of places they're knocking on the door. I want to see somebody who has done their homework.
That was going to lead me to my next question, because you are a hiring manager. You've got a team here in Toronto. There's another team in New York. What have you seen in terms of people applying to you, and you as a hiring manager? Research and understanding who you're dealing with sounds like the first and foremost message. Anything else, any other creative approaches that worked? Because sometimes they fall flat, sometimes they're over the top. Maybe we could share some over the top stories. But what actually works for you? If you want to hire somebody, if you know that you want to bring somebody into Pirate, what is it that seems to work best for you personally?
I'll tell you what didn't work in the past. When I was working for an agency, the creative director was sent a bird, a live bird in a cage. And that was too big, because now he was stuck with a live bird in a cage. I mean, it got his attention, but it was annoying, because it was just past the guardrails of what is probably a smart way to approach somebody. I'll tell you, there's small things that I love. I mean, I love a beautifully written letter to me, a handwritten letter you never get. So let me just say that that's a great way to get people's attention in this day and age.
Handwritten letter.
Don't you love to get a letter addressed to you handwritten? I mean,
like with the handwritten address on the envelope with a stamp, snail mail?
Yeah.
All right.
Because sending somebody a telegram. Folks. You would rip it open immediately, because you never get that. It's a method of communication that no one uses anymore, so therefore it's still valid.
Great idea.
But I love a beautifully written letter that really states someone's point of view or their case in such a fresh and compelling way that I have to see that person. It's a small thing, but it's a big thing, because there's a lot riding on a letter. But I love, rather than the standard, "Dear Mr. O'Reilly, I'm a sound engineer. I'm hoping there's some positions." I don't want that letter. I want to hear, you know, "Dear Terry, I want to tell you a story, and then take me somewhere." Because at the end of that letter, if my reaction is to my assistant Linda, "Get this kid in tomorrow," and that's happened several times, that's what speaks to me, is that you've written something to me that's for me. It's not just for the industry at large.
Like the generic resume.
Right.
So do you read the letters first, or do you read the resumes first?
I read the letters first. Because then it dictates whether I have any interest in the resume.
Many employers do the exact opposite, but I suppose more in the creative industries it makes more sense to read the letter first. Lots of listeners will say, "Well, gee, I spend all my time on the resume, and then, you know, I put a few notes together for the letter, but I often just put point forms because it's going to be an email letter anyways." What do you have to say to them?
I mean, that doesn't appeal to me. I want to get a sense of the mind at work, and I don't really think you can get that from a resume. You can see achievements in a resume, but I think a lot of people can compete that way. I even say about my company, you know, the standard way we attract work is to put a reel together of our best work, but every one of my competitors can put a reel together of 10 great spots from 20 years of work. Really, what you want us to demonstrate is the added thinking, the how do you go above and beyond the call, why do we think in a certain way where everybody else thinks the other way. I mean, it's all those factors that really determine whether somebody's a great fit or not, and I can't detect that from a resume. A resume is a very sterile environment.
Yes. And for the record, my favorite one from your demo reel, and I was listening to the radio spots, was the body shape, without naming the brand, the body shape, and comparing it to a kind of landscape, you know, mowing the grass. I thought that was hysterical.
Just a fresh way to talk about an age-old product. And that's really what we're talking about here, is how do you approach somebody in a fresh way, especially when resumes have been around for 100 years? What's a new way to do it?
And there are new things out there. There's infographic resumes and people putting color timelines on it, and they're doing visual CVs and YouTube videos. Any comment on all these kind of new approaches to the old problem of the boring resume?
Well, I love the notion of that. I mean, it all depends on what your idea is. But I love the notion of that. I mean, all those tools are out there, and I think bringing creativity to them is the name of the game. I think it's fantastic.
Right on.
As long as it's not a bird in a cage. I mean, as long
over
as you
the top.
Don't go over the top, and then it's not that you won't even get a job interview. It's that people will talk about. I mean, the bosses. You know, you wouldn't believe what I got yesterday from this kid named Mark. He sent me. Next thing you know, that guy's not going to see you either. Like, it has ramifications if you're terribly wrong.
And just a little side question on that, and then we'll move to the next topic. But is there a difference between Canadian employers in this whole conversation and American ones? We did have a guest on Career Buzz. New York City, the guy was walking around with a sandwich board. It said, "We'll tweet for food." And, you know, he was totally out there. He had this infographic resume on his website. And, you know, people took him up. He was a little over the top, but people took him up on that. And he got all kinds of contract offers from doing this out-of-the-box thing. And I was listening to him thinking, you wouldn't find this in Canada.
We definitely have a different tone than, especially New York City. I mean, we're a little more humble in our approach. There's no doubt about that, I think, as a nation. But that said, I still think there's room to be creative with it, to be smart and creative with it, not over the top, but just fresh with it.
My guest today on Career Buzz is award-winning advertising and marketing expert Terry O'Reilly, author of The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture, and host of Under the Influence on CBC National Radio. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on CIUT 89.5 FM. So, Terry, I'd like to move the conversation now to the whole career field. The career field is huge. It's important these days. The dynamism of careers is accelerating. Change is happening faster. People need better skills to manage their careers. And yet, a whole bunch of people, thousands of people across this country, they're flying under the radar screen. Most people don't know that people can come to career professionals for help. Research shows, first and foremost, when people have career problems, they go to friends and family, they then go to coworkers, and career professionals are way down on the list. Now, if you had a toothache, you'd know what to do. You take it to a dentist. If you have a career ache, people don't quite know what to do. So I'd like to talk to you a bit about how we can leverage the wisdom of advertising and marketing to this whole field. So first off, let me just ask you, like, when I say the words career or career development, what are your reactions to those words?
Well, frankly, I would say I'm not quite sure what it means without any other context around it. I think if you're asking me that marketing question, I think the first thing that has to be determined is it purely or is it fundamentally an awareness problem, not a problem that people don't value it? In other words, if it's way, way, way down on somebody's list, is it because they really don't know that your industry exists, or they have just a smattering of understanding about it? So whenever I approach a product, I mean, that's one of the first things I want to know is where are we on the scale of awareness in someone's life, in your target market's life? And that determines whether the first step is just awareness, then the second step is education. So now you may say, no, that people are very aware of our product. They just don't, you know, in other words, I'm a store. I sell stoves. But what people don't know is I also sell couches. And then suddenly the strategy reveals itself that, okay, there's some knowledge that has to be imparted. So that's what I would ask initially about career management companies is what is the level of awareness?
I think it's both, right? We've got a problem of lack of awareness, and if there is an awareness, sometimes it isn't the best awareness. People will remember something maybe from high school, or they've had some experience in their post-secondary education, and I think what they think of is either some kind of test where they maybe got an answer that wasn't helpful to them, like gee, Terry, based on your results, you should be a potato farmer.
Yep.
You know, and maybe you have many interests that potato farmers share, but it doesn't make sense to you because that's not something that you're going to contemplate. So they have that experience, or they simply think it's about helping with resumes, or maybe if they're in the world of work, they've experienced an outplacement package or a career transition, which is very much an end of the pipeline solution to a much larger question and problem. So I think we have this awareness. There is an awareness, but it's maybe an incorrect awareness, and it needs to be, what do? Broadened, deepened?
You have to change your perception.
Right. So how do we go about doing that?
There are a lot of ways to change the perception. It's one of the more difficult things or tasks you can give to marketing, but it is absolutely achievable. I think one of the main things when you're changing a perception is you have to first identify exactly what that perception currently is. And then I always say embrace the obstacle, which means don't try and tunnel underneath the problem or detour around it. Embrace it. So take what they think career management is and turn it on its head. Because that's going to have the greatest impact on somebody, is to take their perception and turn it on their head in front of them. Because it's, you're not just giving them some new information. You're it's like jujitsu. You're taking somebody's momentum and turning it around on them. That has a much bigger impact on somebody than if you just moved out of the way. You know what I mean? It's got some tension, and great marketing has tension in it. It creates tension, then resolves it. I mean, that's really, it's like a great story has to have tension to be resolved, etc.
Embrace the obstacle. Don't you love the way Terry O'Reilly is talking about that? You're listening to Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You're listening to a special interview I had with Terry O'Reilly yesterday in his office at Pirate on King Street East in Toronto. He's the author of The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture, and host of the well-known radio show, both The Age of Persuasion and now Under the Influence on CBC National Radio. If you have comments or thoughts on this interview with Terry O'Reilly, we're going to save a few minutes at the end, and why don't you email me, and I'd love to hear what your comments or questions are after you listen to Terry. So send me an email, and I'll read it, and we'll talk about it on the air at the end of the interview. So it's Mark with a K, Mark at careercycles.com. So please do send an email. It's Mark at careercycles.com. Now, did you notice when Terry said, "I love a beautifully written letter"? I thought that was so great the way he said that. And it's so unusual. I think many people don't think about that. That letter, that cover letter, and he loves that. In fact, he'd like you to send that along, snail mail, handwritten, with a handwritten address on the envelope. It made me think of a song. And so just a little musical interlude before we return to Terry O'Reilly with the continuation of the interview. The song is by Neil Young. It's called One of These Days. And notice that there's a line there that says, "One of these days, I'm going to write a long letter." Here's Neil Young.
One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. And I'm gonna try to thank them all for the good times together, though so apart we've grown. One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. One of these days, one of these days, one of these days, and it won't be long. Thank you.
fiddler and all those rough boys who played that rock and roll. I never tried to burn any bridges, though I know I let some good things go. One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. One of these days, one of these days, one of these days.
From the roots up. CIUT 89.5 FM, broadcasting live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. From Hart House, University of Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before continuing on with our interview with Terry O'Reilly, I want to let listeners know that there's an amazing archive of past Career Buzz shows with inspiring guests and career stories. It's at careercycles.com, and check the Career Buzz link. You'll hear last week's show with Lynn Bezanson and Serena Hopkins of the Canadian Career Development Foundation. You'll hear J.P. Hatala talk about the importance of social capital, or listen to the career story of Andrew Fitzgerald, a banker who became an art gallery owner, or Ian Agard, whose whole career changed one day when he watched a movie. These are great and inspiring stories, and we've kept all these archived Career Buzz shows on the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. So check that. You'll also find some info on the Enriching Lives and Careers trip to Nicaragua, Service Learning Experience, Feb 23 to March 2. If you want to find out more about that or any of the amazing Career Buzz archives where you will find the Terry O'Reilly show as well, check careercycles.com and click Career Buzz. So I'd like to continue on with the interview. If you do have comments or questions about what you're hearing with Terry O'Reilly, please send me an email. It's mark@careercycles.com, mark with a K at careercycles.com. And we'll save a couple of minutes just at the very end. So do stay tuned all the way through the end where Terry gives you some of the insights that he's personally learned from making career and life choices on his own. So here is Terry O'Reilly on Career Buzz.
you talk about the power of storytelling. I know it's one of the talks that you give. And the career industry is all about stories. Like, we've got clients, you know, you can't believe the stories that we hear. And I've tried to share them on Career Buzz by bringing ordinary people with extraordinary stories and having them share these crazy stories of twists and turns and moments, like the Cirque du Soleil acrobat who became a family doctor and she was on Career Buzz. How can we, as a kind of an industry, embrace the power of storytelling and start to tell this new story? And, you know, I don't know if I'm asking for a specific approach, an advertising angle, and maybe we have to pay you to do that, but, you know, there seems to be something about these stories. Stories are built into this industry, and yet we have this incorrect story or a story that kind of is just quiet. So how can we leverage the power of storytelling to share a new story with Canadians? And this is not just in Canada. Internationally, the same problem exists.
Well, I am a huge believer in the power of storytelling. Some industries, it's difficult to tell stories. And in your industry, you are loaded with stories. So it's like starting a race halfway down the track. I think compelling human stories about people who had major obstacles in their careers or were in a career that wasn't fulfilling, etc., and then through career management found a way to turn that around. That is the best marketing you could put out there, is genuine stories of humans and people, you know, people who really found fulfilling careers. Storytelling is part of our DNA. I mean, it's there's something about storytelling that doesn't feel like slick marketing. It doesn't feel like it's staged. It doesn't feel like it's contrived. Storytelling has got the beginning, middle, and end of a story is built into our hardwiring. So it's the best way to communicate intangible things like confidence and trust and things like.
It's kind of like a belief.
It is.
It's an attitude.
I'm trying to find
belief.
Exactly the right word to just place the exact right word in that sentence. But storytelling is one of the best ways to communicate intangibles. And intangibles are the emotional connection to a story. If I can't get the general public to have an emotional connection to a product, they may become customers, but they will never become loyal customers. Because an emotional connection trumps everything. It means they will buy you even if the competitor is cheaper. They will search you out even if a competitor is more convenient. An emotional connection is this incredible bond between people and products and consumers and services, etc. The same thing, and it emanates from stories. So in careers, in career management, storytelling is what you need to put out there, because it will create an emotional connection that people can relate to. And that emotional connection will make them get out of the stall that their career's in, the inertia that can happen when you're in the wrong place, where you're unhappy but you don't do anything about it. If there's an emotional connection through storytelling, it will get them over that hurdle.
So it's those feelings, like one of your talks also that I saw on your site, why customers have to feel, not just understand.
Right.
So we're trying to, I think you're coming on strong saying they actually have to feel it. And the words, sometimes, you know, I work in this field also, and I've seen a few key words that are emotional words. They're things like hope. People are looking for hope when they feel hopeless. They're looking for confidence when they don't feel as confident, and they're looking for excitement. Those are three words I know I work on. Is that the kind of thing that we're talking about here, is telling stories of hope or confidence so that people have that emotional connection instead of just describing what we do?
No, that's right, because describing what you do, again, is sterile, and it doesn't engender any emotion. It doesn't... A sterile listing of services is a company talking to itself. Every great advertiser really starts with their customer and works backwards to their company. I mean, you have to. What Steve Jobs did, for example, his brilliance, or part of his brilliance, was he was always able to see Apple from the outside. He looked at it when he introduced a new product. He didn't introduce it as the creator of the product. He introduced it as the number one fan of that product. I mean, he was able to really think like a customer, think like a consumer, And I think that's the key, and that, and storytelling allows that. You show that it's the successful people telling their stories. It isn't just a dry list of services that you provide, because that one is business prevention, and the other one is business attraction.
Right, which is what we want.
Yeah,
attract. My guest today on Career Buzz is Terry O'Reilly, award-winning advertising and marketing expert and author of The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz on CIUT 89.5 FM and worldwide on CIUT.fm. Terry, before I came to interview you, I was talking to the folks at the Canadian Career Development Foundation. They had recently attended a worldwide conference on careers, an international conference. It was in December in Budapest, Hungary. And one of the key things that was talked about there was the language that we use to describe what we do. Now, we were just talking about shifting that language more to emotional language mm-hmm. rather than a list of services. And the question was, is language part of our problem? And I think the answer partially I'm hearing so far is yes. But, you know, we're not marketers necessarily in this industry. So we need to start shifting our language. How important is that, and how do we do that? Like, when I asked you what does career or career development mean to you, and you weren't too sure, and I think you mm-hmm. reflect pretty mm-hmm. much what everybody mm-hmm. thinks, and they're not too sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and at the same time, we don't want to oversell it. We mm-hmm. don't want to say, you see us and you will be so happy in your career. Yeah. Like, we don't want to make a Pollyanna view of what our services are. We want to get it right. You know, we don't want to go too high, but we also don't want to simplify it. Mm-hmm. How do we zero in on that right thing?
Language is so important, and finding just the right words can have completely opposite effects on people. There's a great story in our business where somebody changed the word fix to repair in a headline in a print ad and got 200% more sales than he did the week before with a one word change. I mean, that the shading of a word can make all the difference in the world. When you're thinking about words and language, you really have to remember this. A great ad, I'll say an ad for now, a great ad sells the benefit of the product. And I always use this analogy. People don't buy 3/4-inch drill bits. They buy 3/4-inch holes. And you always have to remember that as a marketer, because your nose is so close to the glass that you fall in love with your own company and the services you provide instead of talking to the outside customer and saying, here's how this will work for you. This is how this is going to affect your life. If we do this right together, these results will occur. That everything, the language you're using, the point of view, is about your customer, not about your company. And it sounds like marketing 101, but in so many instances when I'm in a room with a client, I have to stick handle them away from talking about themselves. And it's not because they don't get it. It's just because they love their company so much that they forget about their customers. And it's not evil, and it's not Machiavellian. It's just from being too close. There's no objectivity. And what I always say about advertising agencies and copywriters and advertising people is they bring objectivity to marketing. And that's the key thing, because if you don't have that critical distance, you'll end up talking to yourself.
All right, so it's about the hole and not the drill bit. It's about yep. the need and not the service yep. that's providing it or yep. responding to it. All right, let me throw these two words at you and see what you think, because this now goes to individuals and even corporations and policymakers. When they think of career development, it can either look like a cost. Oh my God, that's going to be really expensive. I'm going to have to spend all those dollars to get that service or to invest in this national program. Or on the flip side, another word is investment.
Right.
And we're going to invest in career management because that's going to give us amazing long-term benefits. One of the guests on Career Buzz, Phil Jarvis, a well-known career expert, has put together a sort of 1% solution. If there was better career management in Canada, it would increase, you know, 1% productivity and decrease in 1% health cost, et cetera, et cetera. And it came up with an annual savings of something like $20 billion wow. in this country. And yet everybody's looking at this and saying, what's the cost instead of the investment? What about those two words?
You have to frame it then. You have to frame your offering in terms of an investment. An investment is a very tricky thing to explain because it suggests money in and not money out. So there has to be a person. You have to, again, I'm going to come back to emotion. You have to inject a personal connection in that scenario for people to act on it. When you hear people say, you know what, it's January, I'm going to start working out, that's my resolution, 98% of them will have dropped that resolution by February. But when you hear a mother say, I want to lose 14 pounds so I can fit into a size 14 dress for my daughter's wedding, you know she's going to lose that 14 pounds because there's a personal connection to doing it. So when you frame career management as an investment, you have to talk about it in such a way that they see how they can reap the fruit of it. Because if you don't, if it just feels like a cost, if they just see an invoice, if they just see a very sterile list of services and a dollar figure attached to it, it doesn't feel like an investment. It feels like money out. Even inside my walls, and we talk about this often with my employees, there are employees who make you money, and then there are employees that save you money. And the ones that save you money don't get the same attention that the ones that make you money do. But when you really do the math, they're as valuable. So
you got to look at it both ways. But if it's an investment, the message needs to be, you know, how that investment brings it right back home, back to the emotional language.
Right.
Is there anything we can learn about this from other professions and professional associations that you've seen? You know, there's doctors have the OMA in Ontario, and they're trying to get their message out. And sometimes we see professional designations like CGA, and you see them in the newspapers, and you hear radio advertising. And it always occurs to me when I hear that as a whole profession, that there's somebody behind there trying to make an awareness in the listener's mm-hmm. mind, and then educate, because those are two words that you and I came at a few minutes ago. Have you seen anything from professions trying to get their message out that we might learn from?
You know, one sort of parallel would be the real estate industry, because the way they changed their language, of course, is they stopped selling houses and started selling homes. I mean, a brick manufacturer, I was going to tell this story in an upcoming show, went to an advertising agency and he said, you know, I heard that you say emotion is very important, but how can you ever bring emotion to a brick? That's my business. That's my product. And of course, the agency said, because you don't sell bricks, you sell homes. That little, and I know it's very simple, but that little transitional mind jump that you make from a brick to a home, from a house to a home, makes it from being impersonal to incredibly personal to somebody. So it's really, again, what's the end benefit? What's the most meaningful reason they should work with you? Or what's the most meaningful reason someone would need career management? I mean, it's really about trying to peel that onion back to find out what the absolute core meaning is in any proposition. Because that thing is what's going to bring people to you.
And then can I ask your opinion on the difference between two ways that people look at this particular aspect of career? And one is very much dealing with a crisis. I got fired, I lost my job, or I'm so in a toxic environment I need to change. And it's kind of like the toothache. It's the crisis, and I need to fix that and get relief. And that's one angle. Now, look at what dentistry has done. Dentistry has figured out how to make us go every 6 months for a checkup, and so that we maintain good dental health. Now, the analog in career is career well-being. This is an important thing. Why not have, you know, a career checkup once a year or something like that, so that you maintain well-being? Now, well-being isn't as much of a crisis mode. I don't need it. But, you know, how should we go at it? Should we be talking about career well-being, career health, or should we be talking about solving your problems and getting relief from that crisis?
Well, I think the answer is probably both. Because I think you're going to have two different types of clientele, somebody in a crisis mode and somebody who just wants to change or better manage the direction of their career. They're not in a panic mode, but they also need help. See, when you explain that, when you roll that out for me, I find it very intriguing, because you have it within you from just that 1 minute that you just took me through to tell me a whole new way to look at a career. Like, you know, a career management company can help you get in the right job, but then having once or twice yearly checkups on the job, putting the dipstick in and just seeing where the satisfaction level is a wonderful thing, because I don't think anybody ever gets that. And everybody wants that. I mean, who doesn't want to have a guiding hand or a great soundboard or somebody who... When I go to talk to clients. Let's say they sell, they're a toy company, and they're talking to me about radio. I mean, what I say to them is, you know, you have to understand something. I live and breathe radio advertising the way you live and breathe toys. And that combination between us is going to make a very powerful thing. You're the same way. I mean, you live and breathe careers. You watch hundreds or if not thousands of people and the ticks and the ebbs and the flows and the undertows, and you watch this, and that accumulated wisdom, that 30,000-foot view you can take of careers is a very valuable thing. I mean, it's who wouldn't want to tap into that wisdom? But you have to tell that story. You have to. That's why storytelling about the insights you've gleaned, that thing you always see work, that the telltale signs of someone who's unhappy, the better focus or strategy to try and find a different career direction, analyzing someone's strengths so that they can turn that into an incredibly attractive proposition for an employer. That's what your industry can bring. There isn't a person in the world really that doesn't want that. They probably just don't think it's there. They're sitting out there thinking they're all alone. Friends and family is all they've got. When in fact there is, you know, a group of brain surgeons in this category that know what they're doing, that can give incredible advice.
All right, from one brain surgeon, and for all the others listening here, I'd like to invite you, Terry O'Reilly, to join us in the career field and volunteer some insights into helping us get the word out. I was asked to ask you that question here.
Well, I mean, that I can't answer on the spot. I wish I could, because that takes a lot of thinking and a lot of going over research and talking to a lot of people in your industry. But I think you have a great story to tell, and I think, like I say, you're laden with emotion in your business. I mean, a career is a very emotional thing. It's also a big part of our lives. It's not just a pot and a pan. It's not just gasoline. It's not just a tire. I mean, these are the things that
people really care about this.
People really care about this.
Their self-identity is tied to their careers. It matters to them.
It matters to them, and you want to jump out of bed. I mean, I know the percentage of people in the world that love their jobs is very small, and I think that's a huge shame. I said to my daughter recently, as she goes into college, I said, when she was trying to decide on what to study, and I gave her the usual father talk, but what I said to her, and I meant was, I'm in my 32nd year of being in the advertising business, and I can honestly say that in 32 years, I've never once looked at the clock. I have never been bored one day in my career. It's been incredibly stressful. The deadlines will kill you. Clients can be very difficult, but I have never been bored. And I think that is the ultimate thing. I'm always looking at my watch going, oh my God, is it that late already? And I think that's a great way to spend your career, that you run out of time rather than watching a clock tick slowly. And that's why I've been so fortunate, because I love what I do. I'm very passionate about it. And I wish that on everybody.
And as a parent, and I'm glad you shared that, because many parents will be listening, and parents are confused as to how to support their own youth, the kids that are growing up and trying to figure out how to support them in their career and life choices. Great advice. I think being a role model who loves his or her job has got to be the very best thing that anybody can do to actually positively influence their
kids. And it's about following your passion too, isn't it? You can't pick what you're good at. That's a weird thing in life. You can't pick what you're good at. You can hone what you're good at. So I think it takes a big self-evaluation. What do I love? What do I love to do? What do I know I have a feel for? And then find that direction and go after it. And I think people sometimes ignore what they're good at.
Absolutely. And sometimes they need help drawing that forward so that they can get a clear picture of their strengths, mm-hmm. and then they can deploy them in ways that make them happy.
You know, I read a stat somewhere in the Globe and Mail a couple of years ago, and I wish I could remember the exact statistic number, but it was a shockingly high number of the people who change professions when their last parent dies. And I thought that was very telling, because what that said to me was, so many people go into professions that they're trying to please somebody else.
Yes.
And it was shocking. It was sad for me to read that. And I think that's somebody not following their passion. And they may not even get that freedom till late in their life, where you really want to have them come to somebody like you and get early as possible in their career to find that passionate root. So I think it's just so emotional.
It's true. And we've had many career buzz guests who have hit a major life issue, a diagnosis of cancer, a parent dying, and it took that to make a change. And when I ask them for their advice for listeners, they often say things like, don't wait for this thing to happen.
And you know, don't wait is so important because your career is so fast. Like I'm in my 50s, I'm 32 years deep into my career. I'm on the tail end of my career already. I mean, I'm one of the senior statesmen in my business, and I look back on my career and it happened like that. I mean, you can't wait. It will fly by you, and you really only have 30 or 40 years in a career. I mean, and it'll happen fast. It'll happen, and I know you hear that all the time. It happens so fast.
Terry O'Reilly, thanks for joining us here on Career Buzz. I got one more question to bring it back to the personal, but I really appreciate you taking the time to share your perspectives and thoughts with listeners about their own careers and the whole world of careers here. It's obviously an important topic, and clearly you have a lot to add to the conversation about that. If I ask you personally now to reflect on your career and the twists and turns, and you've just been talking a little bit about the journey that you've been on, but from your own personal experience, thinking about those twists and turns, what can you share about making those good choices, about getting to those key points where you maybe have some choices to make, and then making good choices that you can feel good about in the moment, and when you reflect back, you can feel good about later?
I think that's a very insightful question. I think a couple of things. I think one, listen to your inner voice. This is me circling way back to the beginning of our conversation. Listen to your inner voice. Love, honor, and obey your gut feeling. That will keep you in good stead for your entire career. I think there comes a point, too, where you have to ask for an opportunity. When I was a young guy, after I got my job with that great creative director that turned out to be my mentor, I was still the green kid in the room. One day, I saw them all struggling with this big television campaign that only the senior guys ever really got to work on. Us junior guys never got to work on television. So I walked up to him and I said, can I work on that? Is it okay if I take a crack at that? And I think he looked at me kind of wide-eyed, that it was a little bit presumptuous of me, but he said, sure, come back tomorrow with some ideas. And I did, and it ended up being the idea that they went with. But it was, and again, that elevated my career to a certain degree, but I asked for that opportunity. So I think you can't be passive in your career.
Don't wait for it.
Don't wait for it. And I think maybe the last thing I want to say about making a good decision is, and a great yardstick to use is, how will I feel about this 5 years from now? Especially if you're in crisis mode. Because if it doesn't matter 5 years from now, you know it's a small decision. And if it really would impact you 5 years from now, you know you're looking at a major decision. So I think putting some context of 5 years on any decision will help you at least evaluate how important that decision is.
Terry O'Reilly, thank you so much for doing this interview here on Career Buzz. We've been talking to Terry O'Reilly, award-winning advertising and marketing expert, author of The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture. And can you tell listeners, if they're interested in tuning in to your radio show, where do they find that?
I've rebooted my radio series. It was called Age of Persuasion last year, for the last 6 years. This year I've changed it to reflect how my industry's changing. It's now called Under the Influence, and it runs on CBC Radio 1 at 11:30 a.m. on Saturdays, and then is repeated again at 11:30 a.m. on Mondays. It's also on Sirius Satellite, so you can pick it up no matter where you are. And it's on WBEZ in Chicago, so we're actually in the States as well.
Great. Terry, thank you so much.
Great talking to you.
That was a feature interview with Terry O'Reilly here on Career Buzz, chock full of really insightful responses and ideas, not only for the career field, but for individuals thinking about moving ahead in their careers. Thanks to everybody who emailed. We actually just have a moment left in the show. Lynn Bezanson emails from the Canadian Career Development Foundation talking about the metaphor of the dipstick. Love that idea. Check your career like checking the dipstick. How's the engine oil? So check your career. How's it doing? And also asking about the context we need to present this question of careers and career development. So we will have to ask Terry O'Reilly back onto Career Buzz to get all of those answers. Meanwhile, do check out the the show. It will be put on the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. I'll get that up later today. If you want to listen to it, download it, put it on your iPod. You have been listening to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. You can find out more about me at careercycles.com. And the other host of Career Buzz is Leanne Sachs at Living in